going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Joe, we just got it. The league is going to officially suspend play for this evening. And they will get with the teams and they will try to find a date or whatever their next move is. But for this evening, the game is officially suspended. The game will not be played this evening.
That was the announcement last night, about an hour after Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin collapsed after a tackle against the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday Night Football. Tonight, fans organize a vigil outside the Cincinnati hospital where he is in critical condition. Hamlin is in the ICU after suffering a cardiac arrest on the field. What happened? It's the question everyone is asking tonight, but they're also asking about safety on the field of play in one of the nation's most violent professional sports. We're talking about this tonight, and joining us are Dr. Abibola Balogun, cardiologist fellow at Howard University Hospital, also Darren Snyder, award-winning journalist and sports writer for The Griot. If you want to get in on this conversation, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Balogun, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Darren, thank you so much for joining us again. I'll get to you in a bit, but first, Doctor, I want to talk about the medical issue from last night. We've heard all of the reports that said that Hamlin had a cardiac arrest after the tackle. What's the difference between a heart attack and a cardiac arrest?
Awesome. Hi. First of all, thank you all for having me.
Sure.
Just recalling, you know, what happened last night, and, you know, I can speak for everybody. It was pretty much a very scary event. And my prayer goes to him as well as his family during this time. A cardiac arrest usually occurs. It's usually sudden. It happens without warning. And a lot of times it happens whenever there is an electrical malfunction in the heart that would cause an irregular heartbeat, and as such, it disrupts the normal pumping action of the heart. So this means that the heart at that time, and this is the heart that never stops working, the heart stops, and that immediately means that every vital organ in the body is not able to get oxygen or is not able to get blood pumped to every part of the body. So that's cardiac arrest. Mm. Having a heart attack, on the other hand, is more of a mechanical issue where you have a blockage in one of the blood vessels of the heart. Now, these two conditions can be linked, but usually a heart attack could be very sudden, or you could have mild symptoms. So usually they would have, you know, chest pain, and following up to that, it could also lead to a cardiac arrest. Mm. So unlike, you know, a cardiac arrest, usually in some, you know, patients that have a heart attack, their heart would not necessarily stop working. Mm-hmm. But it depends on how soon they're able to get help and how soon they're able to restore the flow to the blood vessels that, you know, was blocked.
And let's talk about that for a moment, because we saw last night, as we often do with injuries on the football field, the immediate care. The medical team got to him in seconds. They immediately started CPR. From your perspective, how critical is that they were able to begin CPR on Hamlin literally within seconds of his collapse?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the best thing, you know, it was a very difficult situation yesterday, even also very difficult to watch. But one of the things I was, you know, extremely impressed about was how, you know, immediate, you know, and how critical that situation was handled. You know, as how sudden, you know, chest compressions were started, and how the urgency to which you receive medical condition, because a lot of times survival of patients post cardiac arrest just depends on how soon they get, you know, the medical attention that is needed. And I have to give, you know, a very huge applause to the medical team on the appropriateness and, you know, the sudden, the immediacy to which they attended to, you know, Hamlin yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was excellent and exceptional. And it's something that, you know, we recommend, you know, in a lot of this recreational activity to practice, you know, and kind of have a very good plan to ensure that, you know, there's an appropriate execution as we saw yesterday.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Damar Hamlin incident last night on Monday Night Football. The 24-year-old Buffalo Bills safety collapsed after tackling a member of the Cincinnati Bengals. He is now in ICU at a hospital in Cincinnati. He is also reportedly intubated and sedated. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Darren, I suspect that you were watching the game last night as I was. We've seen some difficult injuries before, but this one, I think, was unusual. Your thoughts about this?
Yes, thanks, Harold,
sure.
And thanks for having me. I was watching the game, and I saw the play, and they showed one or two replays, and it was unlike any game I've ever seen in terms of the reactions of the players. The players' reactions told the story. Joe Buck did tell us a little bit about what was going on, CPR, but just looking at players, these big, tough, grown men crying and sobbing and hugging each other and looking in utter dismay and shock, that lets you know the seriousness of the incident. That is not anything. We've seen players gather around for maybe a broken leg, a graphic, gruesome-looking injury. When players get head injuries and they have to have their head mobilized and
or immobilized, you mean?
Immobilized.
Right.
I'm sorry. You're looking to see, you know, signs of movement in the extremities. Are they moving their arms? Are they moving their legs? You're worried that they might have some spinal cord injury, and they're carted off, and they might raise their thumb, and, you know, we breathe a sigh of relief. But the ambulance being there and that huge crowd surround the player and the looks on their faces, it was chilling. It was very chilling. And the ESPN broadcast let you know that there was nothing to really say. There was just silence as you just watched your unfold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doctor, you were going to say something?
Oh, no, I'm just listening attentively.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the other things that really put a fine point on this was that the CPR was going on for a really, really long time. This wasn't something that, you know, as we often see with, you know, perhaps victims who have been pulled from water, you know, near drowning, and after, a handful of minutes, you know, they're able to cough up some water and you know, are able to sit up. Did you have any concerns, Dr. Balogun, seeing how long this CPR was going on?
I mean, you know, as a cardiologist, we've seen, you know, CPR go on for 30 minutes, you know, and, you know, as you said, we've had also situations where it goes on for 5 minutes. But the most important thing is, for as long as it takes, you know, for the heart to regain its function at that point is what's most important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some individuals, it takes 5 minutes, in some 10 minutes, I believe, in this case. And in some other patients, it might take longer.
I see.
I think the good part of it is, especially in younger patients, they, you know, resuscitation for a longer period of, you know, you allow for a longer period of resuscitation if need be, because, you know, their body is strong and they're able to kind of withstand whatever impact has been had on the body. But I think at the end of the day, the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours will be crucial. And it's to be interesting to see, you know, how he responds, you know, to the quality of, you know, CPR that he received.
No, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the DeMar Hamlin incident during Monday Night Football. The Buffalo Bills safety now at a Cincinnati hospital after suffering a cardiac arrest on the field of play last night. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Ronnie, calling from Maryland. Ronnie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ronnie, go right ahead. What's on your mind? Ronnie, give me a call back if you can. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. As we know, Darren, the NFL is not going to play this game at least this week. And there are some questions about when that will happen. Your thoughts about the decision by the NFL to wait?
Well, if you're talking about the schedule, this is very difficult and complicated what to do with that game. And that was one of the things that struck me last night, because they called the game officially about an hour after he collapsed. They suspended it temporarily, maybe 25 to 30 minutes after he collapsed. It was clear that they weren't going to be playing the game again based on the players, but during the broadcast, the announcer said the players will have 5 minutes to warm up and resume playing. So that was outrageous to a lot of people, myself included. The NFL has said they don't know where that came from. They never said that. They never had any intention of resuming the game. Of course, games had resumed previously after graphic and tragic accidents. Injuries. So I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they really thought, hey, if the players are game, we can get it done. So the players, I think, and the coaches were of the mind, like, we cannot play this game. This game must not go on. And that's when I think the NFL, rightfully so, said the game can't go on.
Well, I think the NFL appeared to be reading the tea leaves that we saw last night, because during the during that period after the collapse, that that the coaches were conferring and they were also talking to the referees. And I think anyone watching the game could pretty much tell that it was not in the heart of the coaches to continue.
I think the coaches saw it, because the first time Joe Buck said, you know, they'll have a five-minute warm-up period, Then a little later, he said, you know, they're supposed to have 5 minutes to, quote-unquote, get ready, but no one is moving. We did see Joe Burrow throwing some passes.
I remember
that,
yeah.
No one was really looking like they were trying to warm up and play again. Then we saw the coaches come to the field, and they said, to the locker room. And at that point, you figured they were not coming out of that locker room.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ronnie, calling from Maryland. You called back. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I've played the sport, maybe not on a pro level, but I've played. I know it's a very physical sport. And last night, I thought that the NFL and their professionals and their emergency teams handled that very good. I thank God so much for them. That's why that guy's probably going to definitely be all right, because of the technology and the training that the emergency people have had. And second of all, I believe that this was by this being a first time for this type of injury, that to think that somebody's dying on the field, these guys normally go back and can warm up in 5 minutes and go back to playing football. But they were emotionally beat up like everybody else that was shocked watching the game and hearing about this. So these guys couldn't get it together in a half an hour. In an hour, they wouldn't be able to get it back and play, because they're just, normally you get the thumbs up that a player is all right, he's moving, he's going to be all right, I can go back and play. But all we understood last night is we might have had a guy that, we might have had a total tragedy and a fatality last night.
Yeah.
But with the players, And with technology today, I think my guy's going to be great, man. He's going to be all right.
Ronnie, thank you so much. Here's my question, though, Darren. We saw something that was nearly as gruesome when Miami quarterback Tua Tagovailoa had his concussion last September. And he remains on injured reserve. I believe he is not playing after two concussions. Do you believe that that, along with last night's incident, is going to have an impact on the NFL moving forward and how they conduct business around severe injuries?
Well, you know, they had a player die on the field in 71 and the game resumed. They've had players be paralyzed on the field and the play has resumed. It's a culture of next man up, the game must go on, and that's ingrained in the players and the coaches. And, you know, emotional trauma be damned. You're just supposed to suck it up and continue. Last night, seeing a man getting CPR for 10 minutes with an ambulance right there was unprecedented. And so now the question is, you know, we've seen players get concussed, like Tua got concussed. Now the question is, so where is the line when play can't go on? You know, people, the officials and players, I don't know if this is going to reset the line for that, but there is an ethic in the NFL that says next man up.
Yeah.
He must go on.
Hold your point. I've got to take a break. I want to thank Dr. Abibola Balogun for joining us. We'll have more on this conversation in just a bit. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And if you're on the phone, stay with us. We will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the incident last night on Monday Night Football. Damar Hamlin, a safety for the Buffalo Bills, collapsed after a tackle against the Cincinnati Bengals. He remains in intensive care tonight in Cincinnati. He is intubated after suffering a cardiac arrest during the game. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this issue, and we have plenty, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We continue our conversation with Dr. Paul Underwood. Dr. Underwood is the former president of the Association of Black Cardiologists. Also, we continue our conversation with Darren Snyder. He is an award-winning journalist and sports writer for The Griot. Again, if you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Underwood, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me, certainly, Mike.
Sure thing. I do want to go back to the actual incident. I'm sure that you have seen the video of the tackle and what happened afterwards. What do you believe may have caused a cardiac arrest for an otherwise healthy 24-year-old elite professional athlete?
So, first of all, I want to certainly express the deep concern that we have and the prayers and the hopes that we have that DeMar has an uneventful recovery. These situations are very striking when they do occur, and they certainly are very disruptive, not to the person, but to those around them as well. As you said, we would assume that he's an elite, very healthy athlete who has been certainly examined extensively, so that there likely are no outstanding cardiac conditions, which often are responsible for cardiac arrest. But within the sports world, there is a condition known as commotio cordis, which some have called a cardiac concussion, that can occur if someone receives an impact, a forceful impact in the chest, in the left chest in particular, right over your heart, during a vulnerable time of your heartbeat, such that it triggers the heart to go into an abnormal rhythm called ventricular fibrillation, which basically is fibrillation, cardiac standstill, and the heart doesn't pump. And there is a concern that this may be what has caused Mr. Hamlin's cardiac arrest. I will certainly reiterate that I certainly have no information than anyone else does of any type of testing that's taken place. But just looking at the circumstances of a very healthy individual who received a chest impact and had a cardiac arrest, you know, succumbed from cardiac arrest thereafter, this is a leading diagnosis.
It would seem to me, and this is from the layman's mindset, that what you just described is the exact opposite of what CPR is supposed to do. Am I oversimplifying it?
Absolutely. the CPR is chest compressions, mm-hmm. where you're squeezing on the heart as a balloon to help it to pump blood throughout the heart. Right. So that's the pumping function of the heart as it circulates blood around the body. Right. What happened in this case is the timing of the heart, the electrical system of the heart, was jolted. There was a short circuit, and the heart fibrillated. So this isn't a pumping problem. It's more of an electrical problem where the heart really just isn't pumping at all.
I see. Fascinating. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tyrone, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Tyrone. What's on your mind? Tyrone, are you there? Tyrone, give us a call back if you can. So, you know, Darren, one of the other things that kind of came to mind last night, and I really kind of notice this, not just as a result of last night, but as a result of the efficient way in which, you know, NFL football is produced. We've had all of these historic retrospectives. You know, we've seen all of the video of Franco Harris when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And one of the things that I've noticed is that, the pads for professional football players back in the day were so much larger, were so much cumbersome. And now they aren't as large. And I know technology has improved. And I don't necessarily want to put you on the spot, but I'm sure you've noticed the difference over the years. What has changed? And do you believe that the protective equipment that professional football players wear now is better than it was when they were wearing the big bulky pads years ago?
Yeah, a lot has changed. You can see that just by looking at the old highlights.
Yes.
The equipment isn't as big and bulky, but the players are bigger and bulkier. One thing that has changed as well is this, the preparation that the league puts into dealing with potentially catastrophic incidents like last night. They go through a plan for catastrophic incidents. They rehearse the route to the hospital. They identify themselves to the game officials before the game. They have, you know, team medic, paramedic, local paramedics, and health professionals on hand. So as the first doctor said, their speed in responding to DeMar was incredible and largely responsible for him being able to survive, I believe. They also instituted a number of rule changes, trying to make certain hits illegal, trying to decrease the level of violence in the game. The pads, as you mentioned, are better. The helmet technology is better. But at the end of the day, just like in boxing, you're getting hit, and hits can cause damage. So you can't take it away totally unless you're playing flag football, I imagine. It is safer and better, but it's still incredibly violent and dangerous.
Mm. And I think
I would just like to add also.
Yo, please go right ahead, doctor.
So this, with this condition, unfortunately, it's actually seen most commonly in baseball, where there are injuries such as with a baseball that goes directly to the chest.
Mm.
And there are, unfortunately, say a handful of people each year who will succumb to this, and they're typically younger people. DeMar is a younger individual, so that may have had some role in this as well. But it is really, it's the chance timing of a forceful impact. There's about a 40 milliseconds, so 40 thousandths of a second window that this impact can affect each heartbeat. And that impact that he received directly over his heart at that particular instant, could have led to this occurring.
But Dr. Underwood, again, you have no detailed information about the health of DeMar Hamlin. But with that said, one of the things that we learned last night was that he was intubated. And I think the American public has learned a great deal about intubation over the past 2 years as a result of COVID, and that he is also under sedation. Talk to me about why that would be. Why would he be sedated after suffering this kind of cardiac arrest? Why would he be intubated? Does that mean that he is conscious, or does that mean that he is not conscious? What are your thoughts about that?
Okay, so typically sedation means that he would be unconscious,
Okay. Correct?
The intubation is done to provide mechanical ventilation. In this particular setting, we don't think that there's anything wrong with his lungs, as opposed to COVID, where there was a pneumonia that made it impossible for people to breathe. This is a protective. This is done, being done to protect him, to reduce the work of breathing, and it also allows him to devote all of his body's faculties to repairing itself. The major problem that comes certainly after being resuscitated from a sudden cardiac death event, which this is, ventricular fibrillation represents basically sudden cardiac death because your heart has stopped and it had to be restarted with electricity, so with using the paddles to get it started back again. The problem is that the blood flow to the brain ceases when there is no circulation. And this can leave people with extensive brain damage or some brain damage or perhaps hopefully no brain damage. But that is the concern. And so the mechanical ventilation assures that his body has enough oxygen, that he doesn't have to worry with breathing. And to be asleep while you're on one of these machines is more comfortable because it really is having a tube, you know, in your throat, in your lungs, which could be, you know, uncomfortable if you're awake. And so that's the reason for the sedation and the mechanical ventilation. They're likely, as far as we know, there's no problem with his lungs or with his breathing per se, but this is being done as a protective measure to allow his body some time to recover.
Would CPR, while he was on the field, help with getting blood circulated into the brain?
Absolutely. Anytime there is a cardiac arrest, immediate institution of CPR is extremely important, and that is why it is important for us all to know CPR and to have access to those defibrillators, which they brought, as the bills stated in their tweet and their in their announcement, that his heart rhythm was restored on the field. That means that they used the paddles basically while he was there on the field and restored a normal, you know, or at least some semblance of normal heartbeat, to have the heart pump for itself as opposed to having people push on your chest during CPR.
Mm-hmm. Why are the next 48 hours so critical?
They are critical because it determines the degree of potential brain damage that could have occurred. During the time when he was without circulation, again, the major concern is that certainly there could be damage to the liver and the kidneys, but that typically recovers, whereas the brain damage may be more difficult to recover. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're all hoping, is that he has a full recovery.
Darren, we've heard over the past barely 24 hours, not even 24 hours, of who Damar Hamlin is, not only as a football player, but certainly as a person. And like so many young men who dream of playing in the NFL, it often conflicts with the health and welfare concerns of many parents, even those parents that encourage from Pop Warner to you know, high school football to Division I, Division II, to the draft, just getting there. Because as we know, there are only, 32 teams and, 53 men on that roster. So the chances that you would ever be in a game are slim and none for those who dream of doing this. What impact do you believe that this may have on the psyche of the game, or is this just the risk that so many people know is part of America's most popular sport?
You know, we had the same conversation after Tua had those, what we believe were two concussions in back-to-back games. Officially, it was one. But in the first incident, he did seem to have the symptoms of a concussion. And we stop and we pause and we marvel at what a violent game this is. And it's the most popular sport in the country. And we're so wrapped up in it. What is wrong with us? Why do people play it? Why do we watch it so much? And this incident Monday night has led to the same discussion. I've seen people say, like, why do I watch football? You know, we say, Tua, please stop playing. And it's something that we grapple with. Our enjoyment of a sport that we know is damaging to the players. And one thing to keep in mind is there's a lot of damage to players that we don't see because it occurs slowly after they retire and they suffer from different injuries, maybe CTE, maybe injuries with their body, and the effects are long-lasting beyond the public view. So on the one hand, you want to say, like, well, we're a civilized society. Why would we be so into this violent, damaging game? And on the other hand, you know, players are love it. You know, they love it. They love the money. They it feeds their competitive fire, and we love watching them play. So it's something that we wrestle with.
Yeah, and we cannot ignore the fact that it is one of the biggest businesses in this country. We talk so much even outside of the safety, the health, and the welfare of the players, the amount of money that can be made even from someone who never plays, but, you know, is always, you know, second string, third string, part of that 53-man roster. And you could sit on the sidelines and not be a poor person. We talk about the kind of money that's being thrown around now just to buy the Washington Commanders, figures in excess of $7 billion. All of those things creating, you know, Darren, a bit of a perfect storm, and that this game is never going to go away, even with the changes that we have seen this year regarding protecting the quarterbacks, for example.
Yeah, the league is often looked at as a pure capitalistic money making beast, and it is. I think revenues are $20 billion a year. They added a 17th game to the regular season, totally unnecessary. That's just a pure money grab. They don't guarantee the contracts. They fight against expanded health care benefits for players and retired players. The players are treated pretty much like pieces of equipment, you know, interchangeable, you know, wheel one out and throw another one out there. So it's something the way the machine keeps on ticking and we keep on sitting there watching it and buying tickets, and I'm as guilty as the next person.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were watching last night. I was watching last night. I'm sure Dr. Underwood was also, you know, watching last night. You know, and speaking about protecting players, when you look at the kind of padding that the speedsters in the league, the cornerbacks, the wide receivers, the safeties, and to some extent, you know, the quarterbacks. These are not offensive or the defensive linemen. These are the ones who are required to move quickly. Do you believe, you know, Dr. Underwood, that any kind of additional chest padding could possibly have protected DeMar Hamlin? He did not take a hit. He was the one who was doing the tackling.
Well, to be fair, Harold, he did take a good shot into the chest because T. Higgins lowered his shoulder and drove into him. So DeMar made the tackle, but it was more like T. Higgins delivered the blow.
Correct. And again, this is a precisely timed, not intentionally, but the timing of the blow when DeMar's heart, you know, as it relates to DeMar's particular heartbeat, and the location of the blow and the impact, the force that came through the pads, you know, through his chest, and, you know, and tickled his heart to make it fibrillate. That moment is what is in question now. You know, overall, certainly if he had more padding there this at that moment, this likely would not have occurred. But this has happened, again, in baseball, lacrosse, hockey, fencing, certainly martial arts. This same type of event has been known to occur, but fortunately it is very rare. And as you well know, in football, in our, you know, American football, these incidents of cardiac arrest of players while they're playing in the NFL are extremely rare. What's made a big difference is the accessibility of, you know, trained professionals to perform CPR and having those defibrillators nearby, not having to wait for the ambulance to bring them, to have them right there on the sideline so they can bring over immediately and administer electricity to get his heart beating back in a regular rhythm again. That is essential, and it is very fortunate that he had access to those, because oftentimes people have these types of events not associated with sports but maybe associated with other heart diseases where CPR and access to defibrillation is very important for their survival.
You know,
and this is a testament to their utility.
Darren, I don't know whether or not you remember this, but I know, Dr. Underwood, you just mentioned martial arts. And as a seasoned cardiologist, and this is something that I remember as a child, this was a conversation, an interview that, you know, martial arts star Bruce Lee had. And I remember it so clearly, where he said that there were certain blows with his fist that he would not do in the chest of an opponent, because he said that if placed at the right time with the right amount of force, that he could stop someone's heart. And I was really struck by that comment so many decades and decades ago. And you just mentioned martial arts, and we talk about this impact to Damar Hamlin's chest, all of this seeming to just kind of come together in my head, Dr. Underwood.
It's correct. And he is speaking of the same phenomenon. Exactly. And that is in the martial arts that sometimes is called the touch of death. It can be very controversial on how it is taught or not taught, but certainly there is a vulnerable area in a person's chest that if they are struck with sufficient force, this is a lot of force. And so as an example, if you punch someone in the chest, you could get about 10 joules of force. We're looking at maybe around 50 joules of force, which is why, like in baseball, where a ball is, you know, is really traveling, that it can deliver that type of impact. I'm certain that professional football players can deliver that type of impact as well. That's what it would take to tickle the heart, to trigger the heart into this rhythm that causes the cardiac arrest.
Darren, moving forward, how do you think the NFL should handle this? How do you think they will handle this when you're talking about, first of all, this game? We are just literally weeks away from the Super Bowl. The playoffs are still hanging, you know, in the balance. How is the NFL going to handle the business side with the really difficult and delicate issue of the Damar Hamlin incident?
It's tough. So right now, I don't know who they play, but Buffalo is scheduled to play their final regular season game this weekend. I don't see how they finish the game with Cincinnati. It would be very difficult to change the playoff schedule to allow Buffalo and Cincinnati to resume that game. We already know it's not going to be resumed this weekend, so both teams are scheduled to play their regularly scheduled week 17th game, and then the playoffs start the next week. To have them try to resume the game, then you would be putting them at a disadvantage because they'd be on a short week trying to go into their next playoff game. What I think will happen, I don't know, but I think the best thing would be for them to just not play this game and figure out some kind of way to come up with some tiebreaker scenarios to determine the playoff field, the seeding of the playoff field. Because both teams are already in the playoffs. They, you know, the result of that game would have an impact on the seeds in the AFC. So they would have to come up with something. Maybe they give both teams a tie of some sort, or determine how to break ties with other teams that they might be tied with in determining the seeding. I think that's the best way to go, and everyone would understand these are extraordinary, unusual circumstances, and so in this instance, this must be done. But I'm really going to be curious to see what happens the next time there's an injury where players are visibly distraught, and what level of distress must these players be at before another game is postponed?
Well, I think the other thing when you're talking about the mindset of the players, I think that when Tua Tagovailoa returned after the first incident, I think you could see the reluctance of some of the defensive players that he played against to touch him. And as we know, we've seen a lot more penalty flags flying when you're talking about 300-pound defensive linemen attempting, you know, a sack. And instead of, as they did in the old days, they just jumped on you and crushed you. Well, you can't do that anymore. And so now there's this ring around the rosy, grab you around the wrist, swing you down. But if you remember with the second injury for Tua Tagovailoa, that's exactly what happened. He was swung down. He wasn't crushed, and yet he still had that concussive injury that caused his fingers to curl in that really bizarre and difficult to watch posture. And so what can the NFL do going forward to protect players? Some could say this is a fluke, Darren. But
yeah. I mean, there's only so much you can do to protect the players. I think the league is about at the maximum it can do to protect the players without severely changing the rules or the nature of the game. Some people complain, and I must admit, some of these roughing the passer calls don't seem like they merit a roughing the passer call. But they've really done a lot to eliminate those big hits over the middle, the hit that paralyzed Daryl Stingley. But as we saw last night, we don't know what led to it. And as we've seen in other games, you know, there are going to be collisions, and there will be, you know, we know that there's going to be knee injuries and leg injuries and shoulder injuries and limbs, muscles, ligaments. We know that's going to happen. You can't take that out of the game unless you just stop all contact.
Yeah, it may start looking like the Pro Bowl did last year. It was almost touch football.
Right, which is why they ceased it, which was a good idea, because that's not football. So.
Yeah. Dr. Paul Underwood.
I do think that the impact, so this wasn't an injury like a broken bone or a big bruise. This wasn't about damage to tissue. This was really just an impact of force on the electrical system that was transmitted to his heart that triggered this. And in these other sports, sometimes they're able to train the athletes to avoid them, such as in baseball, where young players are trained to turn away from the ball when it's coming at them. Lacrosse, where you cannot.
Dr. Underwood, I hate to cut you off, but I am out of time. It is 8 o'clock. But I appreciate your expertise, and I'm so glad that you were able to join us. Also, Darren Snyder, always good to have you on the program as well. We will continue to watch this. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 3rd, 2023. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.